Muller House Meeting, Sunday morning, 26th September 1976. Yesterday evening, we considered a subject of supreme importance, but it is a subject so vast the time at our disposal allowed us to look at it a little bit only at the transcendental level. But none of us is born with the ability to be awake and to function at that transcendental level. For most human beings, all through their lives, they never touch it at all. Not only do they not touch it, but they never even know about it. Because that stir of the sense of transcendence within them remains asleep. What we ordinarily call God immanent in us never wakes to the fact and the necessity for opening out and conjoining again with what we call the transcendent. So for us, what we call love begins through our experience as animal organisms. The human organism is derived from an animal ancestor. And our sense of touch, perhaps, is one of the first senses to come into play, even from the womb, as well as our sense of hearing. Perhaps inside the mother's womb, one hears the bloodstream flow, sort of sound which you hear when you dive into the water, and you hear that peculiar sort of deep hum. Perhaps the infant hears the mother's heartbeat. I don't know. I can't remember anyway. So that sense comes into operation very early, and of course the sense of touch, living in a fluid medium, and the pressures which work upon one, sometimes pleasant, perhaps, and sometimes unpleasant, perhaps. And after one is born, there is this play of the sense of touch and the sense of hearing and of sight also, which becomes stronger and stronger. And our system, our psychical system of likes and dislikes grows. Right from birth onwards. So we come to like what is pleasant. And what we associate with the source of the pleasant. When the mother fondles us, or sings a little song, or something like that. one comes to associate the person with the sense experience. There is this attraction, there is this love at its animal origin. And it suckles its mother's breast and feels satisfied. And the mother does the necessary things to satisfy it. And also, things happen which the infant feels uncomfortable, so it dislikes it. So at the same time, there is the growth of attraction and pleasure on the one hand, and repulsion and displeasure on the other hand. The love-hate complex, as we call it. The two grow together. But the whole idea of love, which grows in the infant's mind, is rooted in sensation. This is what we must remember. This sensation is a reaction to stimuli, mainly from outside, sometimes from within. Child has a bellyache for some reason or other, and it cries with the pain, or it has a tumble and it cries with the pain. So, this whole complex of attraction, repulsion, love, hate, is rooted in sensation. And sensation is a means of conveying to the brain that which emerges in time and space, goes through some sort of experience, some process, and then dies. It belongs to the realm of the mortal. But we considered love yesterday in transcendent terms, where love is an identity with creative action. Creative action in eternity, which is entirely independent of sensation. It does not depend on sensation, it does not depend on anything. It is self-existent, and it generates everything and puts it out. It expresses all the time. So you see, the physical living organism functions quite differently from the beginning, from the transcendent reality of love. And this transcendent love, as we saw or tried to see quite briefly, is associated with, is identical with, what we call life, death, the other life, and immortality. What does the infant know about life, death, immortality? It only knows the simplest state of attraction, repulsion, pleasure, pain, love, hate. To start with. But as the months and the years go by, there arises the desire to experience more and more pleasurable sensation from the sources of pleasurable sensation. Especially the living people around one, one's parents, one's friends, one's playmates, and so on. And this is what we understand by love. from the beginning. But this understanding is an understanding which is dependent upon sensation and is rooted in the consciousness of oneself as separate from somebody else. And this is the important thing to bear in mind. Creative action in eternity knows no somebody else. There is nothing else. This is the totality. You see? But this idea of relationship between two who are separate and different from each other is paramount when we are infants, when we are young. And with most people, right through their lives, they know no better. So, because the great drives of the living organism are implanted in every single cell of our body, in fact, there is the drive, the urge for self-perpetuation, to continue to live oneself, and to propagate the species. So you see, food and sex play their part like that. And there arises consciously, as the body matures and the necessary glands begin to work at the right age, as that the body grows, there is this strong longing, I want to love, I want to be loved. I want to give love, I want to take love. But love understood as fundamentally pleasant sensation in terms of material experience, physical experience, and a deeply satisfying sensation where one's emotions are concerned. But at the back of it is the separation. I and mine, you and yours. So, this is my mother, this is my friend. And especially where friendships are concerned, you know how jealousies arise straight away, from the beginning. And when brothers and sisters are around, if mother or father pays a little more attention to this sister or that brother, there is jealousy. And so on and so on, the whole thing goes on. But in other words, we live in the state of conflict. Now this longing to give love and the passionate desire to receive love is everlastingly in the realm of duality. It is the same thing. The only difference is a difference in direction. I want to give you goes this way. I want to be loved goes this way, towards me. So you see, there is this everlasting duality, this everlasting separateness. Therefore, the fundamental reality of complete communion, of complete unity, and therefore of creative action in eternity, is absent. And the whole complex of love, disappointment, hate, possessiveness, jealousy, envy, anxiety, fear, deep misery, and the excess of sensational happiness and pleasure, and everything arises out of this. We can be saved from this from childhood onwards. But which one of us is so fortunate as to have the parents, perhaps the friends and teachers around us, who can so bring us up enable us to grow, that is, not to twist us into a pattern of what we ought to be, but like a gardener looking after his flowers, letting them grow. Which of us has had the parents who are wise enough, capable enough, to allow us to grow in human simplicity and perfection? This is where, of course, the difficulty arises. The whole human race is so young, we don't know. We are ignorant, in the state of ignorance. Who is it that can love in the real sense? Only the perfected Holy One. There is no sentimentality in him or her, no attachment, no aversion, no bondage, no separation. There is completeness there. There is no sentimentality. There is no thought attached to it. There is no feeling in one who has realized truth. This is my wife, my son, my brother, my friend. My is out. When my and myself is completely out of consciousness, then the psyche is empty. It's empty, and therefore the creative fullness functions freely through this transparent psyche. There is nothing in the psyche to obstruct the universality of love. But there again, who can help us in these matters from the beginning? If it could be done, the human race would have been saved extraordinary sorrow and misery, conflict, destruction, through the thousands of centuries that it has lived on this earth. What did the great teachers teach? To live the pure life. Pure meaning to cleanse the psyche of all its accumulations, therefore all its mistaken conceptions, its burden of desires and acquisitions and so forth. And they taught very simply, love in its transcendence, not as human beings understand it, something to give and take, something which begins and springs up at a certain time, in a certain situation, for a certain person. But consider, the universe exists, functions, totally functions every single moment without a stop. There is no moment, there is no infinitesimal fraction of a moment when this divine love is not operative. God never fell in love at one time or another with anybody or anything. How true is the statement, God is love, therefore perpetually love. Not at 6 o'clock in the evening and at 10 o'clock in the next morning he's occupied in the office. Not that. Perpetually. It's like that. So, this tremendous problem which faces every living man and woman. I want to give love, I want to be loved. Otherwise I'm lonely, otherwise I'm miserable. And the, well, you all know all about it. I need not say anything more about it. If we can begin to understand and see and let the psyche remain quiet as we go through our various psychical states, then this creative love will work with extraordinary power, a power which will not overwhelm us, which will not destroy us, because power destroys if the instrument is not fit to receive it. If a 240 watt bulb were to receive a current of, what shall we say, 600 volts, the bulb would burst. You see? This creative power does not overwhelm us, does not break us up, provided we are clean inside ourselves. We are not demanding anything. If we don't demand all that is necessary and needful, everything that brings true happiness, true fulfillment is there every moment. It is this turmoil inside the psyche which obstructs the constant functioning of the transcendent. It's a hard lesson to learn, and it's a very difficult one. One of the main reasons is that the life energy in us, which has no concerns about anything, but which is a blind power, a tremendous blind power, driving every organism forward to exist and to perpetuate the species. It's so powerful that it overwhelms our good sense. We are deprived of our good sense thereby. So, the problems, the difficulties. We must learn to let go. Never to demand. Of course, in our ordinary life, it will happen that way, because we are constituted as we are, and our socio-cultural milieu in which we live is of that sort. In our ordinary life, we shall always be going through this kind of experience. We meet somebody and we like him. You see? Because there is a natural sympathy constitutionally between the two organisms. Remember, they are animal organisms. Psychophysical organisms, but functioning at this instinctual animal level. So they like each other. They like the looks of each other, or the smell of each other, or whatever it is that attracts. So this thing happens until we have realized our true perfection and wholeness. This thing is bound to happen, and it keeps on happening. And it happens at the appropriate time in life. But if we observe carefully, we gradually become free of the tyranny which is exercised upon our life, outward and inward, by this power of attraction or the power of repulsion. I don't like that person. Now, when there is the functioning of real intelligent understanding of what is happening to us as we are in our state here, then we know exactly how to express love rightly in relation to everybody. This is the great problem. Man and wife express love thus and thus. But certain expressions of love between man and wife are inappropriate between man or wife and anybody else. It's not appropriate. Friend and friend express love thus. Stranger and stranger express love thus. One meets strangers and one finds this person is in need of some help or something to enable him to get along. Well, then you express love by doing just the needful at the right time in the right way. It's a tremendous art, the supreme art. There is no artist who has to develop such marvelous technical skill in the expression of his art as he who loves universally. And this is how one can love universally. The ordinary man in the world will say, he's a stranger, I don't know him, but he wanted some help, so I gave it to him. He feels like that is a mistake. Man may be a stranger, man may be anybody. But if oneself has awakened from within and is even touched in the slightest measure by this transcendent love, then he will constantly be expressing love naturally and spontaneously, not consciously. His brain doesn't start thinking, no, now this man, I've got to express love in the right way like this. So he makes the right gesture and the right words and so forth, and that is not it. It just happens naturally. That means livingly, by itself. No planned and thought out love. You get planned and thought out love in plays on the stage and so forth, you see, and of course you discount it. You say, oh, this is just a play, it's not the real thing, and so forth. Now, this is one of the supreme lessons we have to learn in life. The art of loving. When there is the art of loving growing within us, with the spontaneous, natural, creative something which is love in its transcendence, then we never go through this comedy of falling in love and falling out of love. Then we fall in love and then we again fall out of love. Love is perpetually here. Exactly as space is perpetually everywhere. You can't fall out of space, can you? And you can't fall into space. Space is there all the time. Love is there all the time. So the human race goes through this comic tragedy all the time. Now, here again, what a wonderful thing the world is, Mother Earth. What a wonderful school of the art of love. Especially in places like this where it is such a pleasant school, so much easier to love, to be in communion with the mountains and the rivers and the winds and the trees and everything. Look, listen, touch the earth as you walk. Remember, you're walking on your mother. What a wonderful field of experience. And never to feel, this is mine. There is nothing which is mine. Not even this living organism. It isn't mine. It is part of the universal totality. And if one really understands that, then one is perpetually in the state of active love all the time. expressed in the right form. And that is where our nature is so wonderful. Nature never hits back at us, does it? Especially, remember our childhood experiences. We are playing quite happily, and then something happens which gives us displeasure, and immediately the two children start fighting, hitting each other. Nature never hits at us. The universal mother is everlasting, everlastingly the universal mother, holding us in her arms, at her breast, all the time, unfailingly, uncomplainingly. So if this kind of sensitivity awakens more and more through our touch with the universal mother, because our own human physical mother, the touch naturally comes to an end within a few years, the very intimate personal physical touch, well, ends in a few months. The child is weaned and the child grows up and runs off and lives its own life and so forth and so forth. But the touch with this universal mother is never lost. And you can love the universal mother in any and every way, and there is no sin attached to it. There is no merit either attached to it, because it is the natural fact of our existence. So it's one of the greatest schools of love, nature itself. So this morning, let us have a little walk and try to respond to this activity of the universal mother, this activity in extraordinary silence and peace just at present, because the weather isn't stormy, you see. And let us see how much we can get in harmony with what we have in our ignorance throughout the ages called inanimate nature. It is not inanimate. It is very much alive. So remember, the right expression, the appropriate expression of love between man and man, then so many of our terrible problems which arise between man and wife, men and women, men and men, women and women, all that can disappear, out of one's own life at least.
Remember, we are practicing meditative walking, not walking in a thoughtful mood. There's a vast difference between the two. Meditative walking, not walking in a thoughtful mood. See, otherwise, this activity in the brain, this talking in the brain, just goes on and on and on. And it's an interference, it's a discord upon the natural harmony of transcendent reality. But in the meditative walking, this is silent. Whilst walking, whilst the body is moving, whilst the body is active, this is silent. Because this contains the past and ideas and so forth. If there is walking in a thoughtful mood, I, the separate person, am walking. What's the difference between this, I, the separate person walking in a thoughtful mood, and anybody else walking for any particular purpose, which is always his own purpose, self-oriented? It becomes our own self-oriented purpose. But if we can walk, if we can practice meditative walking, the self, the isolating self-consciousness is not there. It is not me walking then. It is God walking in the garden, in the cool of the evening, or the heat of the noonday sun, or whatever it is. You see, through man, transcendence realizes, makes real, perfect manhood. Through the trees, through the grass, through the stars, through the sun, through anything and everything, transcendence realizes its starhood, its earthhood, its tree-ness, its flower-ness. See, this is something quite different. This completely frees us, cleans us of all interned selfness. Then there is no selfishness possible. You allow everything to happen in the right way. All we have to do is to see that it doesn't happen the wrong way. We don't have to bother about the right way. It is a very different thing. The Buddha nature within, or the Christ nature, the Christ consciousness within, takes charge, is in function. But what is that? It's the universal. So you see, this meditative walking, or meditative eating, or meditative conversing, talking, whatever we do, this is utterly different from the ordinary self-centered human way, which is the subhuman way. We are neither perfect animals nor perfect humans yet. We are in between, subhuman. Let's move on. This is your own beauty. It is the pulse of creation. If we are very, very quiet inside, even though the body may be perfectly active, if we are very quiet inside, the psyche is like a calm lake, then we will vibrate in tune with this pulse of creation, which is an extraordinary thing of extraordinary power. Some of you have, most of you, in fact, have heard me say some of the latest scientific research that this pulse of life in what we have called so far dead matter is something utterly incredible, calculated roughly at 100,000,000,000,000,000 times a second. See, everything is pulsating at that rate, including the matter of our bodies. See, it does require a quiet brain to look at it. But if the brain is quiet, if you're quiet inside, free of any special desire or anything at all, just sitting by the still waters, not thinking about it, just sitting, just being quiet, you will find yourself vibrating in tune with it. Not at that incredible rate, because one's own awareness is not developed like that. But it's a little bit like this. If you play the top C of a piano, it vibrates at about 4,096 times a second. The strings do, you see. And if you play the bottom C, about 32 times. But you see, this C and that C are in perfect unison, in harmony with each other, aren't they? We may be able to vibrate as much as 32 times per second. Transcendence vibrates at 100,000,000,000,000,000,000 times a second. That is in space-time terms. That is matter. You see what we are? Nothing. Feel it the other way. No thing. Therefore what?
Everything.
The unknown, the unknowable, the transcendent. This is the meaning of transcendence, the meaning of God, the meaning of absolute and infinite. We use these words which defeat the brain, thank goodness. Don't let the brain try to enclose it in a prison, and then in our pride we say, oh, now I know. I never know. The one thing we can know is that we don't know. That's all. That's what we can be sure of, that we don't know. And to want to try to know is like trying to tumble the Lord of his heavenly throne. All that happens that is that he says, downstairs, my boy, and we fall into hell, like Lucifer did. Intellectual pride is a terrific devil. And intellectual greed. I've lived long enough to know this. But when you see it and let go, then you live in the joy of heaven. But your feet are always on earth. Otherwise, there's no link between heaven and earth. They become separate. You and I are the link. between God and His creation. What an extraordinary thing. The beauty inwardly of the transcendent. The beauty to us outwardly. And it is all you yourself. And you are responsible for yourself, for this beauty, for this perfection, this peace. So you see what the seriousness of the religious mind means. And the mind really lightens up and glows bright with this kind of seriousness. It is singing with joy. It's extraordinary things. There we are. Meditative walking, there is the meditative looking. We all look at something. The eyes are set in the head like that, and everything else is outside the eyes. The extraordinary thing about the eyes can't see themselves. So we look at everything in terms of separateness, therefore. In terms of separateness, because we are conscious of self in this separate way. I am looking at that. So you see, the whole self-consciousness intrudes upon the rest of the universe. What an extraordinary thing. This intrusion upon it. This is the looking which splits up the wholeness and reacts with pleasure, happiness, appreciation, or with disgust, annoyance, fear, etc. But the meditative looking, which is this extraordinary looking, where there is no intrusion of the I consciousness, the separate selfness, and therefore the reactivity of the separate self upon the totality. There is no technique to develop this meditative looking. Just look and be quiet inside. And take in everything. Let it make its impress upon the whole being. And don't look for the impress or signs of it. They will show themselves inevitably. The gifts of transcendence are never stored in your jewel box. They are immediately and everlastingly alive and being used. And they are never used up. This is the meaning of life abundant. Listen to the stream. that same stream which we listen to there goes under here. With meditative looking or listening, you become what you look at, what you're seeing, and what you're hearing. There is the state of unbroken holiness present. We'll meet in the evening. When one grows in the capacity for meditative looking, then one never looks at a person, never looking with the eye of separation. There can be no enmity in relation to that person. There is only understanding and love.